Welcome to Middle School Matters podcast number 703, improv, sense of play, and fun. We've got some jokes, we've got some improv stuff, we've got some resources for you this week. So without further ado, here's the wonderful, the magnanimous, the Mr. Troy Patterson.
All right, welcome back to the show. I am Troy Patterson, and with me is the world's greatest co-show host, Mr. Sean McGurr. Hey, Sean.
Well, hello there. How are you?
I'm doing well. We're going to talk about a bunch of stuff today. Last time I went in for surgery, I asked the surgeon if I could administer my own anesthetic.
Did you?
Yeah, I thought that'd be cool. He said, go ahead, knock yourself out.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's good.
Here's one you're going to like. Archaeologists have discovered an oil stain that might be 1,000 years old.
Ooh.
It's ancient Greece.
Got it.
Ancient Greece.
Yep. Found it on a garage floor.
I did a little mechanic work yesterday.
Did you?
Yeah, I put a rear end in a recliner.
I got you.
My good old car days when I used to actually work on cars.
Yeah, when you could, yeah.
Hey, here's a question.
Yeah.
You know how to tie a lot of knots, correct?
Sure. Yeah. You know, yes, I do.
Well, let's say you were entering a knot tying contest.
Okay, I got it.
Yes. Would the score always be tied?
Yes. Not always so, but yes.
Oh, I'm hearing reports that Sting has been kidnapped.
Really?
Yeah, the police haven't got a lead.
See, that one's lost on me.
That's a rock and roll joke for you.
Yeah, that's why it's lost on me, yeah.
Let's see here. I was talking to a friend the other day, and he said, I might wake up early and go for a jog. Might also win the lottery. Odds are about the same.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Motivation.
Here's a tip for you.
Okay.
Marry a zombie.
All right.
They always make you dinner.
That's true. They would. Yes.
Yeah.
Let's
see here. And finally, this one works for a bunch of people of a certain age.
Okay.
My cat knocked over my grandmother's ashes. The Roomba got them before I did. And now it beeps at me until I give it a Virginia Slim.
I got you.
Did you have a grandmother who smoked or no?
No. That was not our family. No.
I had a grandmother that smoked. Lots of family members who smoked. Yeah.
It'd be fun to like bring back some of the for the kids, like in an advisory, show some of those ads.
Yeah.
You know, the newspaper or the ads from the billboards and just go, these are the things you used to see on the sides of roads.
And in everywhere, in magazines. And
yeah.
Smoking was really ingrained into a part of life at one point. So.
And I think we should bring back the old Burma Shave advertisements.
Yeah, the Burma Shaves were interesting.
So. Yeah, they're fun. A lot of fun.
And if you think about it, cars for the longest time had an ashtray in them.
Yes, I remember those days. Yeah. And then it got taken over by coins.
And then it became a coin because people are like, what is this thing? And now I don't think.
And you know, yeah, but we call them coffee holders.
So I'm just thinking because I think the latest car that I bought does not have an ashtray in it at all.
Oh, well, I was thinking about the coins. Yeah, coffee holder.
There's a coin tray, but there's not an ashtray.
That's true. There's not. Well, yes, that's true.
All right, let's. Let's head over to the Middle School Science Minute. And this one, Dave has a great part, podcast this week, great section of why learn outdoors. And I will say that this is something that is really well done in Maine. Our kids frequently go outdoors and learn from the environment. Environmental knowledge is really built into a lot of the Maine ethos. So the kids do a lot of outdoor learning. And Dave is going to talk about that and more than just Maine. So here, without further ado, is the wonderful Mr. Dave Bidlowski in the Middle School Science Minute.
Hi, this is Dave Bidlowski of K12Science.net, and this is your K-12 Science Podcast. I was recently reading the March-April 2026 issue of Science and Children, a publication of the National Science Teaching Association. And I read the section, Taking Science Outside. And there was an article entitled, Place Matters. And it was written by my friend, Mary Starr, Jordan Sherry Wagner, Carrie Tsu, Megan Bang, Sharon Vosuki, and Anna Lees. And they looked at the topic of learning outdoors. And they said that the outdoors is not a distant wilderness or an escape from human life. Outdoors are the everyday environments children and families already inhabit. Our schoolyards, sidewalks, parking lots, community gardens, apartment courtyards, bus stops, backyards, forests, beaches, and more. These environments are rich with scientific phenomena, relationships, histories, and future possibilities. Recognizing these places as living socio-ecological systems helps children see themselves as part of the natural world rather than separate from it. At first glance, the benefits of outdoor learning can seem straightforward: fresh air, movement, hands-on experience. But outdoor learning does more than change the setting of instruction. It changes the relationships we notice, the questions we ask, and the ways children come to understand themselves and their families as a part of the rest of the natural world. When learning is grounded in outdoor places, children have meaningful opportunities to notice, wonder, and make sense of the environments they move through every day, while simultaneously grappling with how those places are shaped by history, power, and community decisions. When we ask why outdoor learning matters, we also have to ask where learning takes place, for whom it matters, and how these places are shaped by layered histories, futures, and power. The why is urgent. Today's learners are growing up in a world where climate change and all of its cascading connectors are reshaping daily life through political, economic, and civic decisions about land use, infrastructure, and shared responsibility. Research has shown that time outdoors supports children's physical, emotional, and relational well-being. Schools have a crucial role to play if education is to contribute to more just and sustainable futures. By taking learning outdoors and grounding inquiry in local places, educators can help children develop the knowledge, practices, and sense of responsibility needed to participate as change makers in a rapidly shifting world. If education is to contribute to more just and sustainable futures, children need more than information about environmental problems. Outdoors also supports effective engagement, the senses of wonder, awe, curiosity, and sensory attunements that are central to children's embodied cognitive and emotional well-being. In contrast to the dominant narrative of climate anxiety and despair, we assert that children need more than just information about environmental problems. They need to feel connected. Outdoor Learning affirms this connectedness through upholding children's rights to experience wonder, relationality, and hope as legitimate and necessary dimensions of science learning. These effective experiences matter for future making. We cannot cultivate just and sustainable futures without opportunities for children to explore values, relationships, and ways of reasoning grounded in the places they inhabit. When educators bring students outdoors to learn with places, not just in them, familiar environments become alive with possibility. Students begin to see that scientific phenomena are unfolding all around them and that their observations and ideas matter. And this has been your K-12 Science Podcast.
Do your kids get out and do you have many outdoor learning experiences for the kids?
No, because the culture of the families that I serve doesn't allow for that, which is interesting because we're now heading into a second generation of that particular kind of culture. And I'm having conversations with those kids that I had are now having to talk to their kids about it, right? And I'm able to, I'm having these conversations with them. They said, do you remember when you were a kid and you couldn't do these things? Not for any particular reason other than, you know, mom or dad just said simply no. There wasn't any reason at all. So are you willing to send your son or daughter on this trip? And it could be a day trip or an overnight trip, doesn't matter. And you can see them going, oh my word, oh my word. And this, the struggle that goes on in their own head as they're like, you know, my parents are still alive. And if I send them, I know what they're going to say, but you know what? I remember when I was a kid and, I have all those arguments still in my head. So I'll share this one story. So I've got one family that has like 50 kids. It's not 50, but it's a lot. And I have the very youngest one of that family. Now I've had every single kid in that family. It's like 10, 15 kids. I think it's 15 kids. And I've had every single one of those kids except for one. So I know this family. And this family knows me. And the other older kids have even said, yeah, when we all get together, we sit around and talk about being in Ms. Baker's class. And I said, why do you do that? He goes, well, because it's something we all have in common. Yeah. I got the very last one. And her older brother is the athletic director in the district. and I looked at the youngest one, and the youngest one's a pistol. I mean, this one is so different than all the others, right? All the others are like, oh, whatever mom and dad say goes. And she's like, I don't care. I'm doing what I want to do. And she's like, okay, but watch that, because I know your parents. I know what's going to happen if you do that. She's like, right. I know. I'm going to do it anyway. Okay. All right. And we're not talking anything outrageous or illegal or moral, that sort of thing. So I looked at her and I said, no, you need to go on a DC trip. And she looked at me and you could see that cultural factor kicked in.
Okay.
I said, but you and I are going to work on your brother and we're going to get your brother to chaperone. And he works for the district and his daughter, your niece is going to be at the middle school next year. And he can chaperone you and her. And her eyes got big like, oh, this could work. So I'm sending him flyers through the inner office mail. You need to chaperone this. You need to chaperone this. You need to chaperone this. And apparently he's starting to yell at his little sister to try to get me to stop sending him flyers about going on the DC trip. But yeah, so working some leverage things there. That was a really long answer to your question. I'm so sorry.
No, that's good. That's good. And I think back to families used to be much larger. Like my mom was one of nine.
Yeah. My dad was one of nine as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one of those things that has changed pretty, pretty drastically as well. So, but yeah, our kids get out and there's river projects, there's trout release, they go to Kettle Cove and do, so the ecology because, and probably in large part because the ecology is so important to Maine, that, you know, the kids need to know about it. So they do. Good stuff, though.
There's an interesting project coming up, and this is not in the show notes, and I'm already off track anyway. So, but there's an interesting project coming up in Michigan where they're sending a deep sea ROV down to the deepest part of Lake Superior. That's about 1,300 feet. And they've discovered that there is a whole ecosystem living in the deepest parts of Lake Michigan and Lake Superior that they've really never discovered before. Like there's, we always thought Lake Sturgeon were like in the Detroit River, there's Lake Sturgeon and they're huge, these monstrous creatures. They're absolutely beautiful. But we only thought that they were right there in the Detroit River. Well, it turns out they're in some of the deepest, darkest parts of the Great Lakes. And there's other things down there too. There's there's a flavor of lake trout down there that, people rarely catch because it's 1,300 feet, down to the bottom. But so they're discovering all these cool things that are down there. And so there should be some things come out of it that might be interesting to add to a science class coming up. We'll give that one to Dave. We'll put Dave in charge of that one.
Yeah. There's, the Kennebec River, which is just right over there. We also get sturgeon that jump. And I think I saw one yesterday, usually the end of June, but, I think I saw one yesterday. We went for ice cream. One of the ice cream stores is right along the kind of, two of the ice cream stores are right along the Kennebec River, honestly, but.
No one expects the Spanish Inquisition.
We know where all the ice cream stores are. and one of them, I think I saw one of them jumping. I just caught, I wasn't like specifically looking for it. And it's like, oh, wait a minute, that was a sturgeon. So, yeah. So the Atlantic sturgeon is what we get in the Kennebec River.
Cool.
So, yeah. All right. You have like 2.5 days left.
I do. Well, with kids.
With kids.
With kids.
2.5 days with kids.
Yeah.
And I've got kids until the 18th. I don't know how many days that is. 9?
Sure, let's go with that. There's a reason you and I are not math majors.
That's right. I'd have to actually look at a calendar, but
right.
So you have 2.5 days left, and then you said with kids.
Yes.
Because.
Well, the 2.5 days with kids was our regularly scheduled program.
Yes.
And we're running into. I'm gonna flip the script a little bit on you. It's my thing today. You know, I'll just let you start. I'll just take it wherever I'm gonna go. But we're running into an interesting thing where the kids have been saying, "Why should I come?" And we're finding out that, you know, parents are supporting that. I counted on last week on Thursday, so it's not Friday. Thursday, 15 kids got signed up. You know, the PA pops on. There's no teaching going on. If there's 15 kids being announced over the PA, you know, your parents are here and they're pulling you out early. And then those kids didn't show up on Friday. They took a long weekend and they're gone. And I suspect they won't show up for the 2.5 days next week. So then I'll get us back on track. Here we go. So where we're going with this is that we had enough snow and flood days this year that my building used it right to the, we zeroed out. So we have no extra days that we have to go. The entire rest of the district is -1, which means they have to go an extra day, which means that the state of Michigan said that even though we don't in my building, I have to go an extra day. So the kids didn't show and I have to go an extra day. So the day after Eid, the kids just decided not to come because it was a Thursday and a half day, end of the marking period. And the kid said, yeah, we're not coming for a day and a half. We're not even coming for the half day. We're not coming. And so Yeah, that happened. So I get punished. I have to go in and I have to do a PD, extra day PD. And I have to go in because I have to print off a certificate. And I have to turn in saying that I was there for the PD day and it's done. And yeah, so it's going to be about 93, 95 on Thursday next week.
Nice.
Yeah, it's going to be roasty toasty.
So, yeah, and I've always, I remember as a principal having the conversation about the last day. It's like, why should we come on the last day? I said, well, because here's the thing. If you don't come on the last day, then why would we have that day? So let's not have that day. And the day before would become the last day. But the logic still holds. Why would I come on the last day? So we would have to back up another day, but then the logic still holds. Why would I come on the last day? And I'd sit there, and it would take the kids for a while to go, hey, so we would never come to school. Right. <Yep. laughs> There has to be a last day, and you need to be here. So, yeah. All right, so you get bonus PD.
I do. I get bonus PD. And we've been telling the kids, oh, this is a new thing this year. We can actually put in grades until the end, up to the end of the year. That's new this year. We're allowed to keep working on our grades all the way up to the end of the year. So we've been telling the kids, it's school. It's a school day. There's going to be assignments. You're going to need to turn stuff in. And last week, at the beginning of the week, they didn't believe us. And by Friday, we had made them believers. Oh, there was a lot of come to Jesus moments where they believe that we have a lot of converts. And so next week I told them they're like, Chromebooks are being collected on Monday. I said, yes, they are. So what are we going to do? Because you can't use Moodle. That's fine. There's paper and pencil. You need to bring a pencil on Monday.
No.
So what we're going to do is we're going to do the Marcus Aurelius quotes. I'm going to do a gallery walk, and the kids are going to walk around I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to pass them out and give each group a quote and have them work it out and then stand up and deliver and then do a little project where they have to take that quote and apply it in some fashion. And I'm going to do that for 2 days, and that's going to be my experiment using an AI-designed lesson with the kids. Mm. And then I'm going to give myself some feedback on that. But that's going to be my 2 days. And then I'm going to say half day is a Kona Ice Day. I'm going to throw Tuttle Twins videos on the board. And that'll be the year. It's half day. Yeah. And I'm really not going to get a lot done. Yeah.
Half days are always tough. I can say that the remark that I made was yesterday, because yesterday was Friday. The office was quiet because I had a couple of people out. The office was quiet, but the hallway was loud. And it was just pretty stark that the kids were like, they were just wound up. Now, some of that might have been that yesterday was also senior walk day. And this is a really neat thing that they do. This is really awesome. The seniors put on their caps and gowns and they walk from the high school to the elementary and middle school. And then the kids line up in the hallway and the seniors walk through the elementary school in the middle school. So the kids get to see the students in caps and gowns. They get to cheer them on. They get to say, yay. And so it's just a wonderful tradition that I think is just awesome, because the seniors get positive feedback, because here there's teachers and students and everybody's just cheering for them and like, yay. And the middle school kids and the elementary school kids get to kind of see that visual aspect of finishing, of completing something. So, so that was something that was just really cool. So I took a bunch of pictures and posted some of them on the website and that kind of thing. So
nice.
Shared the rest with the principals in the high school and that. So it was cool. So, so yeah, that was neat. But the kids were just, I don't know, it's just like, oh my God, the kids are just so wound up. And it's like, we still have 2 weeks to go yet. This is kind of like, felt like last week wound up kind of thing.
Right.
It's like, there's still 2 weeks to go yet, man. So, oh yeah.
We had to do the thing where we sat the kids down and gave them the, you know, school's not over speech, right?
Mm-hmm.
Push hard to the end. And my fourth hour group, the kids that are in the enrichment class, the Solstice enrichment class, at the beginning of the year, they were like, you know, slather knowledge over me. And this last time when I gave them their, so Friday, I didn't mention this in the pre-show, Friday, we did the dihydrogen monoxide project presentation where they went down to the and talked to the sixth graders and persuaded them to vote either to ban or not ban dihydrogen monoxide.
Ban it, man.
Yo, 86% of the sixth graders voted to ban it. Yeah.
Okay.
Then I made the announcement. Yeah. So I'm waiting on Monday to have see how many sixth graders go, wait a minute, what did we ban? Because they'll come and they'll talk to me. But when I signed the project, they are no longer at the point where they're like going, oh, it's a project. They started to grab the people that they wanted to work with, and they started pulling together, and they started figuring out how they're going to solve this problem. And I think that's a big motivator too. If they have a problem to solve, then a lot of the other stuff goes away, and they're like, I want to get this done.
Yeah.
Still, the Genius Week, when we used to do Genius Week, we haven't done it in a couple of years because of all the transition on teammates on my team. But still, the eighth graders came and said, you know, the Genius Week was one of the best weeks we ever had in the middle school, where we got to solve a problem of our choosing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you do Genius Week this year or no?
No. So one of the things with my team is that we keep losing people. So we got a math teacher halfway through the school year because our math teacher took a different job within the building. So she's downstairs doing the math support role. And so we got a brand new, freshly minted math teacher. She's a great lady. She's also brand new. So we have some work to do. And we generally don't do Genius Week when we get somebody that's brand new, fresh in like that, because they're trying to figure out, you know, which way's up. And we don't want to throw them into Genius Week, which tends to be rather a little chaotic. And if they don't, a lot of folks coming in to teach middle school brand new don't understand middle level theory and practice.
Yeah.
So they're coming in and they think it's either an elementary or just a high school type of thing. They don't understand why Genius Week is such a powerful thing with the kids. So we have to teach them, and it takes some time to do that. And then throwing them in like that, then that's one of the ways that next year they'll just go, no, I don't ever want to do this again. And we don't want to have that fight.
Right.
So for the past couple of years, we haven't done that because we've had to break in a science teacher, break in a math teacher. I'm hoping that we have our team solid and set for the next year. So then we'll bring back the Genius Week and let the kids then pick and choose one thing that they want to learn more in depth and do a presentation on it at the end of the year. Because the kids been asking, their brothers and sisters tell them about it. And they're like, you got to ask about that because it was just so much fun. And the kids look, they come into it. And when they're asking with anticipation, can we do this? And it's been hard to say, no, sorry, we're not doing that this year.
Well, maybe next year.
But there's something that might pick up your spirits.
It is pretty powerful. as well. So, Apple event is coming up this week.
And for some people, that will pick up their spirits.
I don't know. I don't think it's going to be haunted.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Yeah. That was the October event.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll be watching with anticipation. Won't affect me professionally as much as it used to, but it will affect me personally. So the other thing that I worked on this week was the transition to the next educational director. So I'm trying to help out with making that a smooth transition for the person coming in and giving them the lay of the land and helping them understand what the job kind of entails and what you got to do and what it all means. So working through that. So
cool.
More of that to come as well.
Yeah.
Let's swing around and take a look at the social web.
Oh yeah. Middleweb. Middleweb posted a free, free summer math summit. It looks great. They say 3 days of practical support, 30 plus K-12 math experts, including some of Middleweb's most read contributors. And if you want the link, it's at collaboratedwithjuliana.com. And there's a link in the show notes. Better to just go to the show notes and click the link and do it there. Emily had a couple posts this week. Do you or someone you know have the vision, experience, and passion to provide strategic leadership for AMLE? AMLE is now accepting nominations for 2 open positions on our Board of Trustees. Learn more and apply by June 30th, and there's a link in the show notes for that. And then also, nominations for AMLE's Educator of the Year are due by July 15th. Gather inspiration from Katrina Hill, the 2025 honoree, and review the 2026 nomination requirements. There's an OWLE link in the show notes for you to take you directly there, not to pass go and not to collect $200.
Yeah, and actually, just clicking on the link, there's not only the board, but there's a couple of other volunteer opportunities as well over at AMLE. So I would strongly suggest taking a.
Oh yes, that's true.
Clicking on the link there. So.
Brookfield Labs had a Moodle tip this week. When you're doing your Moodle design and your or even any sort of design, don't use click here. Replace it with a descriptive link like download syllabus PDF. So there's an accessibility in Brookfield tip for you.
That's one of those things that's hard to get people to adjust to as well. I've talked to lots of people about the don't use click here. So this is great because this gives you an example as well. And instead of saying click here, it's like download blah, 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 and said. Because it's one of the things that can help with ADA compliance, and it's easy, but it's a little bit of a mind shift. And getting people to make that mind shift can be tough. So, yeah.
Yeah. Edutopia had an article this week that I thought was interesting. It said, increasing engagement with improv games. In school, students often feel pressured to produce polished answers or perfect test scores. So improv offers something increasingly rare, which is permission to play, fail, experiment, have fun, and try again. There's 5 different strategies inside the article itself. But there's a bunch of things out there where you can use improv to teach. A lot of Jack Birkemeyer strategies are variations on improv games. And they're always a ton of fun. Not use them as nearly as much as I used to in the past. And this is a great reminder that I need to really incorporate them into what I do because I'm finding that my students do not have a sense of play. And as a result, it's hindering their imagination and the possibilities as to what could be when they're starting to brainstorm and put together projects. They just don't brainstorm because they've never had that play experience.
And this might be good to add to my sub portfolio as well.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
Because I'm going to need things for that. I'm a big believer. I've not really taken a... Have you ever taken an improv class?
I've taken... So I did a lot of volunteer acting in college, but never officially taken an improv class. But when you have friends who are in the theater department, you get roped into things. And I'll just leave it there.
That's true. That's true. So I've not taken one, but I respect the process. I've read a lot about it. And one of the things, as I understand it, is the first rule of improv is you don't disagree. You don't say but, you say and.
Right.
And that idea of not outwardly disagreeing with somebody, but saying yes and just going in a completely different direction can be a good leadership skill too.
That's true.
So, yeah. So there's
Brad Johnson. Brad Johnson wrote a great book called Kid Prov. And right in the very front, he had a page that had five rules of improv. And number one was you can never say no. No, right. It has to be yes and. And then you can add to anything you want. You can even be absolutely completely contradictory, but you have to say yes and first. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it kills the whole scene. And he used to, all the Kid Prov books are out of print yet. I mean, you can find them, but they're not being published anymore. And he had a whole series of improvisation cards that you could buy, cut up, and then the kids would use the cards that had a picture on it, and they would create a scene and a story based on the card, and they would lay it, then they would use the card to tell the next part of the story. And I found some of those. I made masters, right? I had the masters and I made copies for the kids to use because the kids destroy stuff. I teach seventh grade.
It's
one of the most destructive forces on the face of the earth. And I think next year I'm going to pull out the Kid Prov cards. I did a couple years ago, pulled out the Kid Prov cards. And taught the kids how to play Kid Prov, you know, the improvisation using the cards. Mm-hmm. And it was one of my most requested activities when we would have, you know, 5 or 10 minutes where there's a gap and we're waiting for the office to release us for something or, you know, something else in the schedule was not going to make it so I could do what I needed to do in a sufficient amount of time. Pull out the cards and have the kids just start using their imagination and saying things. I'll see if I can find it. I'll put a link in the show notes if I find it.
Okay, that's awesome. All right, I got a couple of AI things this week as well for you. Okay. First up, teen boys are choosing AI girlfriends over real life relationships.
Wow!
With disastrous consequences. Say experts. And this is something that I've kind of continually heard is that that kids aren't going through the that tough process of creating friends and learning social skills. And now with AI, this is becoming exacerbated, and it is becoming where teen boys are using the robo-girlfriends instead of real life. Because in real life, you talk to a girl, and you might get rejected, or you talk to another person and you might get rejected. Whereas an AI is going to be, oh, yeah, you're great. You're great. You're great. You know, and there's no rejection. There's no learning that learning how to reject somebody, learning how to say, you know, no, this isn't something I want to pursue. But instead, always getting positive feedback, always getting something that is like, yes, and you're great, and you're smart, and you're wonderful. It's an interesting development and a little bit of concern, especially with the personalization of AI. And I can't stress enough that AI is not a person. It is being presented that way and sold that way. And I think kids, especially kids who are still developing cognitively, is like, that gets pretty thick into, okay, this is a person kind of thing. It's fascinating. Have you heard of any of your kids like doing the relationship kind of thing with a chatbot?
No, but 61% of my students, the relationship thing is haram.
You're right.
They already know who they're going to marry. That was arranged back when they were born.
Yeah, and haram means
it is a Islamic sin.
Yes, it's forbidden. It's considered a sin to date and thing. There's a couple of interesting things that came out here. Some of this comes from the UK, and a survey done through the United Kingdom, but I'm guessing it's pretty universal at this point. And they surveyed 1,000 boys aged 12 to 16. 20% of them know a peer who is, quote, dating, unquote, an AI chatbot. And over 25% of them prefer the attention and connection of a bot partner to a real human-to-human relationship. So I think it's something it's interesting, and I think it's something that we need to be talking to kids about. I'm not sure who needs to be having those conversations, but somehow, somewhere, we need to have those conversations about what a chatbot really is. So, all right. Next up, over at the 21st Century Principles principle, the title, I think, says an awful lot here. When tech CEOs make predictions about AI, remember they are trying to dictate the acceptance of their product. And this is just a reminder that a lot of the stuff isn't true. A lot of the AI stuff is wishes and hopes and dreams and an attempt to steer society towards that environment. We were going to get fully self-driving cars in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And last I checked, it is not 2020, and we still do not have self-driving cars. The latest models that have come out are, quote, too scary to release to people, to the general public. Here's a tip. They said that about some of the previous models as well. So it's an attempt to control the narrative, which all businesses do. And it's just that now with all of the hype with AI, I think we need to be cognizant of that, because frequently our little brains skip over that, and we hear, and if you hear the drumbeat of this is going to do this, this is going to do this, this is going to do this, you believe it without actually figuring out, wait a minute, is it really going to do that? And it's funny because I've been listening to lots of podcasts right now. One of the common themes is they're like, we need to really teach critical thinking. We need to support critical thinking. We need to get people to really think critically. And I'm like, yeah, we should have been doing that for a long time. Because, again, there's this drumbeat of AI is going to do this. And they're like, no, it's not. But yet the drumbeat is there. And because it's something new and because it does do some things, there is value in AI. But it's like maybe not understand how it works and what it does rather than just listening to everyone say that it's going to do this, that, and the other thing. So have you heard much about that drumbeat of critical thinking, or has that not been on your radar?
So I'm working my way through Matt Miller's book on AI literacy. And one of the things he talks about is in this process, we shouldn't make a specific class about AI literacy. It should be taught throughout our curriculum as a way of teaching critical thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's see here. We also have, is screen time becoming a thing where you are?
The teachers in my building are, very, very emotionally attached to this issue.
Do you have a parent group that's really pushing screen time, or?
No.
No?
Their priority is the soccer and wrestling schedule.
Well, it's good to know that soccer and wrestling is being taken care of here. So, mm-hmm. You know, so the screen time is becoming a big thing just about everywhere. And it is something that I'm hearing a lot about. And A.J. Giuliani has a interesting post that is the screen time excuse, why blaming ed tech isn't the solution that we're looking for. And I think it's important to not argue about screen time, but I think it's important to be prepared and to talk about it and provide reasoned options and reasoned thinking. 'Cause I know this, you know, there's always something that's going on in education. And he talks about that, about how there's always this villain that education is supposed to be solving. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the research that is being used by parents to say we need to get rid of screens does not say that. It is research that's being misinterpreted and misapplied. And it is important that we understand that. And he even says, A.J. Giuliani says, the data is real. the story around it isn't. And it's why it's important to understand what's being done and what's being said. So he includes a lot of research here and some chatting and talking about things that are very beneficial. I think it is great stuff. And he says, one of the things that I personally think is we need to be clear about why we're using technology. And I think the times where it's used inappropriately or non-educationally are times when we have to explain why we're doing that. And again, it's not like kids and teachers can be on every minute of the day, right? There are times when you need a break. There's times when you're not going to focus. But really be cognizant about that, and be smart and do the right thing for learning. But I think it's a very good article. It's a balanced article, and it is definitely worth your read. Cell phone bans. The state of Maine is banning all personal devices during the school day, from class next year. I think Michigan is doing something similar.
House Bill 4141 did pass the House. It got modified in the Senate, and a resolution did out, went to the governor. She assigned it. And starting in the fall, all Michigan school districts must have a cell phone policy, and cell phones will not be allowed inside the classroom unless specifically directed by the teacher for a lesson.
Okay. There's not that exemption in the Maine law.
Yeah, I think that this piece in the Michigan law is kind of a nod to say, here's a loophole, so that the penalties, you can always say, well, the teacher let them have it, and then you get out of some of the penalties for having to do that. Really, really what they need to do is just have a policy. And then each school district can then define what the phone presence in the classroom looks like. But the question then becomes, how many administrators are going to go after phones in a building if the parents are the ones saying, I want my kid to have their phone on them? It'd be interesting to see what the effect of change will be. I don't think it will be much in Michigan.
Yeah. Maine put aside, I think $400,000 to implement this, which comes out to about $3 a kid. So one of the other tech directors so Yonder Pouches, mm-hmm. which is, one of the ways of doing this, those are like $30 a kid, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So one of the tech directors put out, hey, good news, I found a way that is budget friendly, and he sent a link to a roll of aluminum foil. One per kid, and then at the end of the year you can make a great tin foil ball or whatever.
Kids were making hats for the last day of school.
Yeah. So over at Newsweek, though, has a little different perspective on this, and that is why school phone bans aren't about kids. And Governor Whitmer is noted in this and what she says. And she says basically, it says there's a study that examined the data from 2018 to 2025 and found little academic benefit from phone bans. The same study found that bans did not significantly affect attendance, perception of online bullying, or in-class engagement. And one of the Duke University economists and one of the paper's authors, E. James Barron, put it bluntly, it's hard to move outcomes like test scores. But the policy did move the thing that teachers experience minute by minute, device use inside the classroom. And so part of this is teachers say the quiet part out loud. The stricter the policy, the happier the teacher. And there's also a section on why politicians sell child wellness. So it is, it's worth a read. You can be critical if you wish, but it is worth a read. And let's take a look at lunch for a minute here as well.
Lunch, except when there's lunch shaming. And that's one of the topics for Access to Culture Translator this week. Lunch shaming. What it is, lunch shaming is a form of bullying where classmates are secretly taking photos of their peers eating lunch and sharing it, sharing the images in social media. It's reportedly on the rise, with about 14% of elementary students, about 18% of middle and high school students reported being bullied in the cafeteria last month. Why it's a thing? Well, it is a truth universally acknowledged that mid-bite, nobody looks glamorous. And the Wall Street Journal reported that the shaming tends to fall into two categories: the lonely eater, caught eating alone, and the ugly mouthful. As a result, kids have stopped eating lunch at school altogether. One 18-year-old told the Wall Street Journal that one of his good friends was biting into a turkey sandwich. Then a camera flash, and the photo circulated the school during their freshman year, and they didn't eat in front of anyone again for years. When one school district in Washington implemented a full-day phone ban, staff noticed an increased number of middle school students eating lunch.
That is interesting. And I'm reminded of, I don't know if you ever watched the show How I Met Your Mother.
Yes.
There's one where Barney never takes a bad photo.
Yes.
And so Robin takes a photo of him eating a chip, right? Mm-hmm. Nacho chip. And she looks at the picture, and it's not a photo of him eating a chip. It's him turned sideways, and it's like looking good. And she's like, oh, what? I took a this. You were eating a chip. And he said, nope, it's impossible for me to take a bad photo.
That's funny.
Yeah. So for everybody else in the world, yes, we know most of the photos are bad, right? So interesting. All right, you can find links to everything we've talked about today and a few more things over at middleschoolmatters.com. And some of the links are really good. They lead to stuff that is very valuable. Check that out. And we have links that go back over 18 years now. There's a plethora of links. We would also love it if you'd tell your colleagues, your future colleagues, if you're hiring a new teacher, say, hey, listen to Middle School Matters and get some tips and tricks and things you can use in your classroom as well. Of course, we'd love it if you'd help to the podcast catcher of your choice. Give us a 5-star rating. Tell us why Sean is the world's greatest co-show host. And with that, this has been Middle School Matters for middle school educators who care. All opinions expressed on this podcast are exclusively the opinions of the host and guests. and not indicative of any employer.